sleep. To be.
Okay, I'm recording.
I'm recording.
Here we go.
Amazing. Hello, everyone. Hey, girls and gays. Welcome to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
And we're back for episode 14. Wow. Big 14. Wow. Logan.
Yes, Sammy.
Do you ever feel like it's questionable that we're hosting this podcast, or do you feel okay about it because, you know, we're experts and things like that?
You know, call it women's intuition or ESPN, but I think that was a Scary Movie 3 reference, everyone.
It was a Mean Girls reference.
It's like, no, I was talking about mine. Call it women's intuition or ESPN.
ESPN is from Mean Girls, though. I'm sorry.
Okay,
but that's Karen says that. She goes, okay. It's like I have ESPN or something.
Okay, well, in Scary Movie 3, she's like, call it women's intuition or ESPN, but something's happening here. And I just always feel when things are coming on, and then she runs into a microphone.
Okay. Are you sure? Because you also thought Tim Rice was in Scary Movie 3.
Okay, fair point. And I'm positive. Scary Movie 3 is my favorite movie of all time.
Okay, perfect. Amazing.
Anyways, call it the ESPN, call it imposter syndrome, but I do feel like it's questionable that we have a podcast.
Me too, but you know what? I'm rolling with it. And you know what? Mm-hmm. You better, in my opinion.
Yeah, like someone's got to do it.
Yeah, there was no one
else. Be the girls and gays.
Yes, we needed to bring it to the people. Anyway, so we're back after that long-winded reference-infested intro. So what we do here on Rate, Debate, Recreate is each week, Logan and I pick a musical based on a category, and we rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10, discuss which one is better, have a little friendly discussion, and then rethink one aspect of that show and recreate it, hence our name, Rate, Debate, Recreate. Good job. And as we said, we have a category each week. And this week, this might get a little weird, folks, but this week's category is shows that it's questionable that they even made the cut for this podcast for one reason or another. And this week, my show is Bridges of Madison County.
And mine is Title of Show. I feel like before we give the summaries, we should give a little insight onto this category, because I remember why we chose this. When Sammy and I planned out the first season, we basically like listed out over 100 musicals that we both knew and took turns picking which ones we wanted to talk about. And at one point, I was like, we should just both pick a show that's like, we don't even maybe know why we want to talk about it, but we do.
After watching some videos, we need to have a discussion about.
Yeah, we do.
Both. Stephen Pascal's jeans.
Yes, okay.
We need to talk about it.
That needs to be the focal point of this episode.
Truly. I have so many questions. Anyway, but should we get started?
Let's get started.
Right. So we're going to get started with a little summary. I'll start with Bridges of Madison County. So this show is based on a novel, a critically panned novel from the research I've done. I've never read it, but apparently it was popular, I guess, but like not well received critically. a novel of the same name by Robert James Waller.
Was the Divergent of its time.
Yeah. Or like the 50 Shades of Grey of its time.
Oh,
like, spoiler alert. We'll get there eventually. anyway, and there's also a Clint Eastwood movie from 1995 starring Queen Meryl herself and Clint Eastwood. Mm. So the book of this musical is by Marsha Norman, and the music and lyrics are by Jason Robert Brown. Ever heard of him? And he actually won
the musical.
Ariana Grande, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, he actually won original score and best orchestrations at the 2014 Tonys, which I think was deserved after looking at those things. Yeah, we'll talk about the music. Anyway, And also before we get started, I just like to point out that this is another Derek Klena production. Shout out to my husband. Okay.
Future. Speak that into existence.
Future. I mean, he's getting married. I'm not going to do that. But.
Okay. Well, I've seen marriages end.
Oh, God. I hope not. We're rooting for you guys. Anyway. So the show takes place in the 1960s in Iowa on some farm where you meet Francesca. And she's an Italian war bride, which I didn't know this, but a war bride is a woman who married someone in the military from another country, like during military occupation. So she met her husband in Italy while it was under occupation. And she lives on a farm with her family. Her husband, son, and daughter are leaving for a few days to go to a steer competition. They're like have a prize pig because they're in Iowa. And Francesca is, she's going to miss him, but you know, she's excited to have the place to herself. But then a National Geographic photographer straight out of a romance novel cover, Mr. Robert Kincaid, shows up. And he's traveled to the town to take pictures of the famous covered bridges of Madison County, hence the name of the show. And over the next few days, they fall in love and have an affair. Both of them start connecting with each other over their shared experiences. And, you know, they're having feelings they haven't felt in a long time. But Robert asks Francesca to leave with him, but when her family comes back, she ultimately decides to stay with her family. So then the show does this weird fast forward thing where it skips forward in time and like Francesca's husband dies, people get married, things happen, but they haven't seen each other. And then we see that older Robert and older Francesca, while they haven't seen each other, they still remember each other quite fondly, which leads to my favorite song in the show from one Mr. Stephen Pascal, It All Fades Away. Anyway, so I'm going to rate Bridges of Madison County. This might be a little high, but I think the music elevates it pretty a lot for me. So I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 abnormally long vibrato filled notes.
True.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So title of show is a bizarre show to say the least. First of all, I guess I should like for the visual people out there, title of show is in brackets and all lowercase. So it's like, yeah. It's meant to be like the stand-in for the title of the show. It's about two friends who are struggling writers, Jeff and Hunter, who set out to write a musical to enter the New York Musical Theater Festival. And the show processes or documents that process. So this is a show about two people writing a show about two people writing a show to enter a competition. Yeah.
Inception. It's like musical Inception.
It really is. So yeah. The entire show literally consists of four actors and actresses, or four total, four chairs that like really purposely don't match at all, and a pianist. There's literally like, other than those four chairs and the pianist, there's no stage really, except for the ground that they're on. So basically throughout the show, we watch Jeff, Hunter, Heidi, and Susan. Those are the names of the characters in the show, but also the names of the actors and actresses in real life. And we watch them think out loud about what to put in the show and then put it in the show by thinking about it. So yeah, like you were saying, it's very meta. It's very Inception. It's hard to go like really deep into the plot without giving too much away or like also doing some analysis that I want to do in my debate / recreate part. But basically the gist of it is that we watch this show develop from like this inkling of an idea to a show that's like kind of ready to be submitted to this festival, to a show that makes it to Broadway, which it actually did. And that was like not really expected, I think, at the time they were making this. No. To the literal show that you're watching. Like it's wow. Pretty crazy. Yeah, lots of comedy in there. Very, very weird, funny, and like self-referential show. I'm gonna give title of show 7 out of 10 fat ass Fanny's fatal fucking face.
Beautiful. Wow, that's incredible.
And if you want to see a video of Sammy saying that, just Google Die Vampire Die on YouTube.
Great song. Wonderful song. I'm also going to give title of show, I think 7 out of 10 fat ass fannies, fat old fucking face is pretty fair, I think.
And I think we're very aligned this week because I'm also going to give Bridges of Madison County 6 out of 10 abnormally long held vibrato notes.
Wow. Show done. Show over with. We don't need to discuss.
And I agree that that's a high rating. And yeah. I'm doing it because of the music, which I think I know that sometimes I say when it slaps, it slaps. But that is 100,000% the case for me with a show. Like when songs from this show slap, they have me in tears. Like, yeah. It's beautiful.
I honestly think it has some of my favorite music ever, which is funny because watching it.
I feel like you said that when you picked it because you had never seen it before you picked the show to talk about.
It just has amazing music.
Okay. Well, I feel like we should start debating, and I feel like a nice central question that we can start off with is which show deserves to be on this pod more? Since we're talking about how questionable it is that they made it in the first place, I feel like we should try and argue why it's more important that one of our show made it than the other.
Honestly, I'm going to say Bridges of Madison County is because, first of all, stacked cast, quietly. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to point some of them out first, just first and foremost. And then I have one more point I want to make. So of course, Robert, Stephen Pascal, hunky, sexy, beautiful man, wonderful. Hunter Foster plays Francesca's husband, brother of Sutton. Derek Klena, as I mentioned, he plays a son, and sometimes you can really tell it's him. Like, there's a point in Home Before You Know It where he goes, "Come on," and I'm like, "Yeah, that's Derek Klena." and then Carolyn, the daughter, is Caitlin Kinnunen, who I believe we forgot her name a few episodes ago.
Possibly. I think that was Izzy McCalla, the other girl from prom.
Okay. Well, Izzy McCall, I apologize. Because
I am a Caitlin stan and an Izzy stan, but especially Caitlin.
Yes. So I like to apologize to Izzy. You're amazing. And also I'd like to give Caitlin Kinnunen her due. She is really good in this, in a part that is not necessarily great.
Not at all.
Not at all. So anyway, so those are some of the names that, and of course, Francesca is Kelly O'Hara, who that brings me to the second part of my argument as to why this show deserves to be on it more. Kelly O'Hara is, I don't think she gets the love she deserves. I know people like her and think she's really talented, but every time I watch her in anything, I'm really struck by how open her face is. She's very expressive and she invites the audience in a really beautiful way. You see her on stage and you automatically am oh, I like that person. I root for her just because of the way she emotes is very inviting. And she, I think, is a saving grace in this show. Stephen Pascal.
I was going to say, I would absolutely say that she is the highlight of the show for me.
Oh, yeah. And listen, we're going to talk about Stephen Pascal, and he's great. But Kelly O'Hara is just absolutely amazing in this show. And I think she elevates it way higher than I would have ever thought it could be with someone else. She's just great.
Yeah, agree.
That's my argument. I think Miss O'Hara deserves her due.
Okay, I'm gonna argue title of show, and here's my here's my main point. My main point is this is a musical theater podcast, and title of show is probably, I'm trying to think of an exception to this, and the only even possible thing I can come up with is something rotten. But even then, I don't think it's at the same level. I think title of show has some of the most musical theater references in any piece of work that I've ever seen. And so I think this is a show that anyone can watch and can enjoy, but I specifically think that it is a show for musical theater lovers by musical theater lovers. It's hard to even say every single freaking point about the how many references there are, but I did write down a few of my favorites that I want to say. Okay, well, first of all, one plot point is that there's like often phone calls from like famous actors or actresses. And so they actually got all of these people to like record these like voicemails that cool. that happen in the show. So this is the list of people who appear in the show just with their voices. Carrie Butler, Maren Mazzi, rest in peace, Victoria mm-hmm. Clark, Christine Ebersole, Sutton Foster, Patti LuPone, and Emily Skinner. That's yeah. not just the people that are referenced, that's literally the people who are referenced and their voices are in the show. Another awesome. Example of a reference is one that I think you made, I don't know if it was last episode or two episodes ago, and I didn't even catch it, which is, I'm so ashamed by. But it's, oh, it was last episode and the next normal one is Alice Ripley. She's fierce.
Yes, she's fierce. That's my favorite that's the first line time I've ever said fierce. It's so funny.
So it's apologies like so funny. For missing that one.
It's so funny because it's like, it's true, like it's 100% true, but like yes. I would have never picked that word to describe her myself. And so yeah. when someone says it, you're like, oh yeah.
It's also just like in the middle of this random song about like yeah. what they're dreaming of, who they could get. And they're like, oh, we should get Alice Ripley. She's fierce.
She's fierce.
yeah. And then one other really good one that I love is one of my absolute favorite songs in the show is called Nine People's Favorite Thing. I'm going to talk about it more in depth later, but at one point in the song, they're basically talking about how they wish they want the show to be nine people's favorite thing instead of going for commercial success. And they go, those nine people will tell nine people, then we'll have 18 people loving the show, then 18 people will turn into 525,600 people. Like, they just like really, really throw that shit in there, like at every possible opportunity. And I think that that is why that this show belongs on this podcast, is because like people that are listening to this podcast are probably just our friends, but ideally are our friends and people who have a deep love for musical theater. And there's probably a big crossover in that bucket too. Yeah. But this show like is for those people. Like if you love musicals and if you love the theater, you're going to love Title of Show.
That's so true. I would also like to point out my mom listens to this podcast, something I learned like 2 days ago, and I am embarrassed. So sorry, Mom, for some of the things.
My mom definitely does not listen to this podcast. I haven't talked with her about it, but I'm 100% sure she doesn't.
She like, we'll see, maybe she does. I was talking about like what day we had to record, and she goes, oh, I'm not all the way caught up yet. And I was like, what?
How far are you?
She's like a few episodes in, and she was like, sometimes I laugh, but sometimes I'm like, what?
You know, that's a fair assessment.
I was like, that's
that should be
mom's.
Like on our book cover. Like, sometimes I laugh, but sometimes
I'm like, what? Terry Purcell, shouts to you, Mom. Oh my gosh. Okay. That's a really good argument. And I will say, maybe we can dive into a little Title of Show stuff, because I didn't yeah. watch. I have never seen it, and there's like a college production on YouTube mm-hmm. that's just like on it. So that's what I watched, and they were great. They were really funny, and like everyone was great. But I felt so bad because the crowd was like barely in it, and I was like, ugh. "You bitches, this is so funny!" And they were like, "You know, you just like don't have a good crowd." They're just like,
"Yeah,
that is, yeah." I felt so bad because it's such a funny show. And I thought they did a great job, but the crowd was...
That's really interesting. I wish I had watched that one. I mean, I don't. I'm happy I watched. I did find the original Broadway mm-hmm. production. Susan Blackwell, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry if you don't condone watching bootlegs, but I had to see this.
No, it's a pandemic, baby.
It's a pandemic. Theater doesn't yeah. exist right now. Anyway, that's so interesting, though, because to me... I understand that like it would be really cool and fun to do the show, but also so much of the show revolves around it literally being Jeff, Hunter, Heidi, and Susan, like their yeah. actual characters. And I think that changing that, I think it still obviously would be really fun and a cool show, but I don't know, I'd be interested to see that, because a lot of the jokes I feel like are even made about them and like the plot line of Heidi getting cast in Little Mermaid on Broadway. Yeah. Like, that was a plot line because that actually happened. Yeah. It's not like Heidi did get cast as Ursula in Little Mermaid mm-hmm. and destroys the fuck out of that role. Also, wait, oh my God, how did I not open with this? I guess first thing I need to say about Susan Blackwell and Heidi Blickenstaff, the two women in this show. First of all, mm-hmm. if you've been listening, you know that I love women in musical theater. That's my thing. These two women blow me away in such different ways. Susan Blackwell might be my all-time favorite human associated with musical theater. If you're not familiar with her, she has this show on YouTube on like Broadway.com, I think, that's called Side by Side with Susan Blackwell, where she interviews like other Broadway actors and actresses, but interviews is maybe a weird word for it. Like, she does she does like unique activities with them. So for example, one of them, she like literally went to Jonathan Groff's family's farm in Pennsylvania and like hung with them. One of them, she like did gardening with Philippa Sue. So she does these weird activities and then interviews these people. And I genuinely think she's one of the funniest people in the world. Like, mm-hmm. I find myself crying, laughing. And Heidi Blickenstaff is just like a phenomenal, phenomenal actress. She was in that. She's been in Little Mermaid. But Heidi Blickenstaff, I sat next to. That's not true. I don't know why I said that. I stood next to in line to enter a Broadway theater. I don't even know what show it was.
Oh my God.
I think it was The Prom. When I saw that like pretty soon after it came out. So it might have been that, but whatever show it was, I literally was like right next to her, and whoever I was seeing it with someone, and whoever I was with didn't know it. And I was like, oh my God, didn't know who Heidi was. And I was like, this is Heidi fucking fucking stuff.
Did you say anything to her? Or you're like, excuse me, I just have to say. Or
no, I don't think so. I was just scared.
I wouldn't have either. I am so worried about bothering people, which I guess is like the
same option. I know, because I would like, I don't hate anyone. That if I was a celebrity.
Really? I think I wouldn't. I always try to think about that because I wouldn't hate someone coming up to me and being like, I'm a huge fan. I just wanted to say blah, blah.
That's true. I wouldn't hate
but
that.
But then I would never do it, you know?
Not like, yeah, I think I would just dislike it if I was famous enough to where that happened like all the time.
But she's probably not.
Which I don't know. She's probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so she true. Might have been very, like, oh, great. Like,
yeah. You know what? You make a fair point.
It's like when me and my sister saw JoJo the Bachelorette at a bar, and it was my sister's birthday.
It's
and
she just was like
super
that.
Nice. Yeah. Well, she's famous to a very specific group of people. She's not famous to anyone, you know? Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
She's nice. Anyway.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit more about title of show. So one, like, the reason I gave this show that I wanted to say a 7 out of 10, it sounds like I'm like only praising it, is while I really love the show and I think it's hilarious, I just don't think it's like at the same caliber of other shows that we've talked about on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But B, one criticism I have of the show is that I do feel like it does read to me a little bit more as a comedic play with like really hilarious musical skits. More than a musical, despite I was just saying how it like has so many musical references. I also think the Tonys even kind of like nodded to this. So the only Tony nomination the show got was for Best Book. And it's definitely like a booky musical. Like, it's a lot, there's a lot of dialogue, and it's hilarious and it's really well written. But I hate to say this because I love this show, but at one point in the show, they're like talking about how they don't want this show to be like Donuts for Dinner, which is like, you know, it sounds good in theory, but in actuality, it's just like not actually what you want to eat. And it's, they're like, I don't want this to be a bunch of like, you know, skits and bits that we put back to back on each other. And I don't think that the show is, but I will say that the musical numbers do kind of feel like that for me. Like, it does feel like, here's funny dialogue, pushing the plot, funny dialogue. And now it's time for the musical number. And I think part of that is by choice. But at the same time, this is a musical theater podcast, so I need a little more. Despite that, the music is amazing and hilarious at the same time. There's a lot of like really, really like funny and unique and self-referential numbers in the show. I actually am not even going to do a bop list this episode because this is one of those musicals for me that I like decide to listen to title of show. Like, sure. I'm going to listen to it all at once. but some of my favorites that I just want to talk about are Untitled Opening Number and To Nobody's in New York. Those are the first two songs. So the show literally opens by the one of the main actors, I don't know if it's Jeff or Hunter, singing A, D, 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 F sharp A will be the first notes of this show. And like, honestly, I think that's a really genius opening because I think that tells you everything you need to know about the show. Like, they're doing this show as they go. They don't break the fourth wall because like there's not even a fourth wall to break. Like the show is the wall. and so then they like talk about how this is the opening number of their musical. They don't know what the musical is yet, but this is the untitled opening number. And then you go into Two Nobodies in New York, which is
great song.
Yeah, great song. Mm-hmm. It's a scene between Jeff and Hunter, and basically they're like, "Hey, what are you up to?" And discover that there's this musical theater festival and get into the song of like, well, what if the show that we write is just us writing this show? And this dialogue that we're saying right now could go into the show. And there's a lot of funny, like, can you rhyme Sweeta with theater?
Isn't he like, so I could say Wonder Woman for president and it'd be in the show? Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, there's that. There's the song I Am Playing Me, which Heidi sings. And that's a really cute little like kind of old timey jig about, so Heidi's learning this song in the context of the show as she's singing it. So they're like introducing the song to her. And basically the gist of it is like, I'm in a show where I'm playing myself. And I think it's really funny. Best song in the show for me, hands down. Die, Vampire, Die.
Yes! It's so good!
Such a good song. And I also think that it's truly, like, is a really, really, like, amazing message wrapped in this comedic as fuck and, like, bizarro alien out of this world kind of song. So the gist of it is, like, the vampires that are stopping you from being creative and creating whatever art that you create, you need to tell them to die. And it's Susan Blackwell going through all the list of potential vampires that you can have and these external voices that come to you and are like, you're never going to be good enough, or you don't write this style, or your stuff is too profane. This is the song where the fat asshole. Yeah. Sondheim and Sedaris did it before you and better than you. but then at the end, it takes this like really eerie twist where it's like the worst vampire of all is the vampire in our own heads that tells us we're not good enough and that we'll never amount to anything. And that one thing that I really love about this from like a, I feel like I talk about this on the podcast a lot, but I'm just like, I'm definitely into working through trauma and healing as like a thing to do in your life, but also like to visualize and represent in art. And I think that that's what this song does, is it's like literally taking your inner demons and making them this like external demon that you can characterize as something that's not you. Because oftentimes it's really easy for us to think like, oh, I have these thoughts, I am this thing. I am not good enough. I am not going to amount to things. But that's not true. Those are like, that's not you. That's not your essence of self. So I really like that they do this song in a way that's like literally painting them as this demon that you can slay, because I think that's true.
That's really beautiful, Logan. Okay. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you. I pop off sometimes. okay. Last song that I think deserves to be highlighted. That's not true. There are others, but just for the sake of not going on too long. The song Nine People's Favorite Thing is, I think it's so beautiful musically, but I also think it's like a really good kind of like tying the show together. It's kind of like the 11 o'clock number. It's right before the finale. And the whole gist of it is basically like they're saying, I'd rather be 9 people's favorite thing than 100 people's 9th favorite thing. And it's this mantra that they took with this show of like, we are doing this show our way. We're not going to do something that like is selling out for commercial success. And I think that's a really, really cool. And I think that the song is like, I kind of feel like that about our podcast. Like,
oh my God,
I literally do. Like, I'm not trying to do this podcast to like become a professional podcaster and like quit my job or anything. Like, I'm doing this podcast because I love musical theater. I love you. I love people that listen. And I just want to like talk about it. And I want people that are interested in that to get joy out of this. And so for me, I'm like, I'm not trying to make a podcast that like millions of people are going to listen to and we're going to get, but I'm like, I want to make a podcast that's so us and that's so what we want to do, which is musical theater, that it becomes 9 people's favorite thing. And maybe that's all it ever is like 9 people think this is their favorite podcast, but that's what we made and that's what I want to do.
Woo! No, buddy.
We cry a lot on this podcast, Sammy.
Well,
put a Cancer and a Sagittarius on a Zoom call together and see what you get.
Lots of tears. Wow. Wow, that was really nice. Okay. I love you too.
Okay. I can vamp more if you need some time.
No, I'm good. We'll just segue. You know, speaking of music and speaking of
crying.
Well, I was gonna also say, and I guess my mom listens to this, but whatever. Also, get a Sagittarius and a Cancer into a room, and there might be some horniness going on. Speaking of tears and horniness, Bridges of Madison County.
They go hand in hand.
Hand in hand. So, I want to talk about the music, and then I have some other stuff that's like I don't want to talk about quite as seriously, so I'll save that. Okay. But from a musical standpoint, and again, I've like what I've seen is like clips on YouTube. So for me, like the highs and lows in this show, even musically, because I have like a reason why I think this, are like vast, just like mountains and valleys, the highs and lows. So I think that for the most part, everything.
1 second and a million miles, you could say.
1 second and a million. Exactly. Oh, God. Okay. I think everything. I'm still crying a little. Everything between Kelly O'Hara and Stephen Pascal. I'll get more in depth into it later. But I think for the most part, it's really wonderful, especially like musically. Like both of their songs are so beautiful. And I think they do a wonderful job. But I think the only song, and I like some of the songs outside of their little world, but the only song that I like truly, truly love and care for outside of all their duets and solos is Another Life, which is an also weird song. What did you say? You texted me and you were like,
I texted that Sammy while I was watching this. I said that, Another Life is the Another Suitcase in Another Hall from that we talked about in Evita's episode. Bridges of Madison County, because it's like an amazing song. It's an underrated bop, but you're just kind of like, why? This doesn't really add to the plot. Like, it feels like you just had this cool idea for a song and wanted it in the show.
Yeah, it gives him backstory, but like he could have done that. And in my, I think in my perfect world, and I'm gonna say this, and like this is a Jason Robert Brown show, but like I wonder if this would have worked better, like on a smaller scale, like last five years-ish, but for Broadway. So like big, like the music's bigger, there's like an orchestra, it's grander, but it's just like maybe kind of kept more between the two leads. Cause what they seem to do is like everyone, and it's already sort of small, like there's a big backdrop, there's a few like moving set pieces, but for the most part, it's like a few things of furniture that like move around. It's not like a super complicated set.
Not at all.
From what I can tell. And I think like it's already not like huge production wise. And the cast is fairly small by like Broadway standards.
It's only what, 7 people?
Yeah, it's not that many people. And I almost think it would have worked better if it was like just those two people on stage, like working through their things together. And instead of like, as much as I love that song and like Another Life is a beautiful, beautiful song, like nothing happens with her after the fact. And like, she doesn't even, and even the way it's staged is like.
I also don't even think like, even if like assuming the argument that that song exists in the show to give more context for.
Yeah, which it does. Robert. And she has a, like Kelly O'Hara has a song like that too. What's it called?
Yeah, but Almost I don't know. Real. I'm just like
yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, Another Life is sung by Robert, the protagonist's ex. And she's like a guitarist, like singer-songwriter kind of vibe. And she's singing the song called Another Life that's kind of like reminiscing on their relationship and is how that was like one of the paths, like I guess, that could have been the reality. Yeah. And I do agree, like it gives some backstory and stuff, but I don't, like there's not really, literally the context leading into that song is there's a guitar and Francesca asks about it and he's like, it's my ex-girlfriend's, like we don't talk anymore, we're not together, I don't
know.
Like. He has this weird ass little yeah. And then she just kind of like comes on stage, takes the guitar and starts singing.
Yeah, and it's so here's I have a lot of questions because so right before he Francesca asks, she's like, right before this happens, she goes, oh, was she a photographer too? Because he's a National Geographic photographer. Mm-hmm. And he goes, no, she was a waitress and she wanted to be a singer or something. Like, he's kind of like, oh, I don't know. Like, maybe she got to be a singer. And I was trying to figure out if it was framed like, this is her at like the same time somewhere else trying to be a singer.
Yes, but, I couldn't like, tell.
But I was also like.
Or if that was like a figment of his memory.
I know. And if she's a singer, why the fuck did she leave you that guitar? I'm really confused why he has a guitar.
Yeah, I agree.
That's my biggest thing. That girl.
I just don't think it belongs on the show as much as I do love that song. It's one of my top three songs on the show.
It like could be done without completely.
Yes.
And I think like most, as much as I would never wish for like less Derek Klena in a show, he's there. The family is unnecessary. And I think like, I think it, okay. I think it is.
Sorry, I just had an idea. There.
Okay. Okay. Do you want us to talk? I only have one more thing to say.
Can I really quickly? It's about Another Life.
Go ahead.
Okay. So what? But this is my train of thought. So I was like, Another Life doesn't belong in a show. We've discussed that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it should just be because it's such a beautiful song. It's like it should be in, you know, one of those like Kerrigan and Loudermilk albums. Then I was like, oh my God, Jason Robert Brown has one of those, Songs for a New World. So it's like, this song would deadass fit perfectly in Songs for a New World.
Ooh, it would Wouldn't fit it? In something like that. It fits in something like that. Yeah,
like a
sure.
song yeah. cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Just not in like a show.
Okay, sorry for that interruption.
It's okay. That's okay. But I was just going to say, I think like, obviously, like there's the point in the show where Robert's like, where Robert's like, come with me, come with me. Like that whole thing, that Stephen Pascal thing. And, you know, like she's struggling. She has a family, but she loves this guy who like, also if you think about the timeline too hard, it's only been 4 days. But she decides ultimately to stay like after her family comes back. And I think that's why they keep cutting back to like the pig competition. And all that stuff, because they want you to like care about her family. But I think when you haven't, so you understand why she stayed, but that is a problematic statement to me. Like she's has teenage children. And I think when you've an actress as talented as Kelly O'Hara, like I trust her to convince me that her family is important to her without them having to be around and sing songs about state roads and pigs. Not that that's all they do, but I'm generalizing there. But I think it would have worked as like a smaller show just between those two, where you're learning about their past through them instead of like weird songs from the people on the periphery of them. Like I didn't need the periphery. I think they had enough chemistry to like pull it off themselves. And we can talk about, because the other thing I want to talk about is the sex. but go ahead.
Okay, so on the topic of their chemistry, I feel like there's this weird dichotomy for me with this show where I do think that Stephen Pascal and Kelly O'Hara had phenomenal chemistry in the show. But I think that all of that that they brought was them. I don't think that that's like that chemistry is in the book and the lyrics of the show. No, well, lyrics, and yeah, it is in some of them.
Not but in the book of the show. Not in the blocking, not in the movement. Not
yeah, like, yeah. It was really, really hard for me to suspend the disbelief knowing that all of this fucking happened over 4 days. And like, look, I'm not here to bash Love at First Sight. Like, if that's your jig, go for it. But like, I don't know. It's just really hard for me to imagine a world where you like meet someone in passing and have this like connection, which I understand, but it's just like not showed. Like, why? I don't, and part of me feels like it was a choice to not show that. I don't know if that's the reality or not. I think Jason Robert Brown is a pretty talented guy, and I think that he could have written this better, but part of me was like, well, maybe that's the point. It's about these like human, not perfect, but maybe in our minds perfect, like connections that we make. But even then, I'm like, I just want it. This whole show just leaves me wanting more and less. Like, it's a fucking long ass show.
Yeah, it's so long. Oh my God. And if you cut the periphery, it'd be shorter. Anyway, but here's the thing. I think they shied away from the sex in this show, which like I get it, it's on stage, it's on Broadway, we can't
watch Kelly O'Hara having mind-blowing sex with Stephen Pascal. No,
but we could maybe do it a little more than this. I don't know, like,
but also please,
I was like watching it, and after I watched it, I found this review that like completely summed up what was like going on in my jumbled thoughts like more than I can articulate, and then I'll try to articulate it like with examples after I read this quote, because it was really good. It was a review in The Guardian by Alex Solosky. So he said, unfortunately, they, Kelly O'Hara and Stephen Pascal, and I think he's a little harsh, but I for the most part agree, they seem more like best pals than fervid lovers. The companionable vibe enhanced by chase choreography that suggests the sex is best achieved with jeans zipped and buttoned. And I will talk about those pants because I'm upset about the jeans. Okay. But so all the reviews, this review included, are like very, especially very generous to Kelly O'Hara, but very generous to Stephen Pascal as well. And like watching them, I was like, I get what this review means, because I do think they have excellent chemistry, but most of what they're given to do is like sitting around drinking beer, like palling out and talking about their past, which is important in a love story. But when you have 4 days, it should be more about the sex. It's not crazy. Like, that's why those like short romances work. Like Maria and Tony were like, God, you're hot. Let's bang. You know what I mean? And then like the circumstances elevate what you're feeling, but it's like based off initial attraction. And I think it was just like too pally. And so, I mean, I don't know. I get what, like, Stephen Pascal, okay, let's talk about him. He looks like he walked off the cover of a romance novel in this show.
Yeah, like, literally, though.
He's literally, his hair is long, he's got, like, beard going on, he's got, like, his unbuttoned shirt all over the place. And, like, the times when they're, like, making out, or they're, like, are, like, I was like, damn, like, this is hot. Like, you guys look great. But then, like, the choreography or the blocking would just like, I don't want to say this without like being embarrassed, I just thought it was like too tender for a passionate love affair. I don't know. It just like, they'll kiss and like she'll unbutton his shirt and I'm like, oh, okay, this is like going somewhere. And then they'll stop and they'll like hug and sing. It just felt like whoever blocked it or whatever was too afraid to like go for the sexy. At all. And I'm not saying they should like get naked and fuck on stage. Like, I don't want to put anyone in that position, but you can block things in a way that are like sexier. Like, there's a part where he, it's like the first time they kiss and he backs her up like against the counter and he slams his hand on the counter behind her. And I was like, ooh, like that was great. Because
it's like right after she hangs up on the phone with her husband too.
Yeah. And I think it's like right around a time when he's like, if you want me to go, you need to tell me to go now, because like, I think I can leave now, you know? And that's a great line, like to portray like really wanting someone and like passion and all this other stuff. And I think when they're actually given the opportunity to do that kind of stuff, they do it really well. It's great, but they're rarely given the opportunity for there to be like an animalistic passion between them. They like tried to go more for the love story. And I think when it's such a short amount of time and she's married to a guy she's been married to for 18 years, you got to play up the like sex. I'm sorry. You just have to.
And I agree. Like,
and Stephen Pascal again. He sounds like a guy who would like throw you up against a wall in a good way. Like, you know what I mean? Like his voice is like so strong and manly. Like in One Second and a Million Miles, he says like, when they're going back and forth and he goes, please just look at me. Like that, I like felt that in my loins. I felt that in my soul. Like I felt it in my entire body. Like, so it's just, I think it's frustrating because it is there. They have the chemistry. There are like little moments where you're like, ooh, something passionate is happening here. But then it just like goes into like tenderness or like whatever. And I'm like, I guess it's Broadway and they just, but like, then I'm like, Spring Awakening was on Broadway. That's a weird show full of naked Lea Michele.
Teenagers.
So, like, yeah. They're like children. She's like 12.
And both in the show and IRL, but, like, yeah, she was so what, like 16?
Oh, I have no idea how old she was. But
I think Lea Michele was like, I don't know. I need to stop saying things.
But anyway, and I'm not saying we should recreate everything that happens in Spring Awakening, but it just seemed like these are two grown adults, and it just seemed that they shied away. And you can do passion. Look at Pride and Prejudice. You can do passion without even kissing each other. Like you can do longing and like sex appeal without kissing each other. So like, I just wish they lent into the physical attraction of it more, because it's 4 days. In any of those stories, there has to be like an animalistic passion. And when they get those opportunities, it's great. But for the most part, they just seem to be like, well, I love and respect you. And that's not what I'm looking for with this kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? I feel like their chemistry's there, but the book, I feel like I have a word for it now, which is that it just feels like she's being extremely hospitable to this nice guy.
Right?
Like, that's how it makes it feel. Like, I do agree that they have a connection, and I kind of feel that, but like, in terms of how I'm guided with the staging and the book of the show, she's just being nice. Like, she lets him into her house. She cooks him dinner because he doesn't, like, everything's closed. Like, it just feels like she's being really nice to this guy. And, like, she takes a liking for him. But I don't know. I 100% agree with a sex thing. Like, make him fuck.
Well, and, okay, listen, I don't want to put anyone
in know, position. Okay, I know,
like,
I know,
if
I know.
They don't, I mean, I agree. But, like, if they don't feel comfortable doing that, that's totally fine. And, like, it should be...
Yes.
What they feel comfortable with. And obviously, like, no one's going to fuck on, I guess, unless it's Spring Awakening, no one's going to fuck on stage at Broadway musical.
Or hair, maybe.
I guess they were naked. I don't know. Anyway, it just should have been, I think the focus should have been more on their physical connection and how that exacerbated the, like, feelings they had towards each other.
Because or it's masturbated also the feelings they had.
Yes, that too. Well, they don't need to because they have each other. But because it also helped, that would have made more sense to me. Because she seems to like her husband fine. I don't know. Like, she seems to have, I guess he's gone sometimes, but like companionship doesn't exactly seem to be what she's lacking. Seems she's missing some D, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And like, love can come with that. I don't know. I don't know. I love them both, and I think they did a great job with what they were given.
I agree.
But
I think that they do a good job, but okay, should we head on to the recreate section? I feel like both of us have so many thoughts about these shows, but
yeah, we've talked for so long.
Wait, actually, I don't. Okay, is there any more that you want to say? No. I don't want to like push us there.
The only thing I have one question, and then we can leave it.
Yeah.
Why is Stephen Pascal always wearing jeans after sex? That's my only question.
Oh my god!
Who puts on jeans after they have sex, and then lays in bed again?
Who puts on jeans?
Not me.
I don't think I've worn jeans since the pandemic began.
All right. Recreate time. We've been talking a long time.
I know.
I'm so sorry.
Hey, for the 9 people who wear their favorite thing, they'll listen. Children will listen.
The children will listen. Oh, man. Okay. I'll do my recreate first.
Okay, cool.
So I mentioned 50 Shades of Grey. So apparently this book was like the trashy romance critically panned novel of its time. And I was like, what's the trashy panned, critical panned, whatever, romance novel of our time? And I thought, I can't believe that it doesn't already exist, a 50 Shades of Grey musical. So I decided to make one just based like using the Bridges songs as a model.
Ooh.
So I'm just
I also feel like 50 Shades is like a more modern, like more risque accepted version of the affair that happened, which was probably really risque in the 60s, even though this wasn't
I saw that movie in a theater and I cried at the end because I was so uncomfortable, but that's besides the point. So we start off with To Build a Home, that song, opening song, becomes To Get the Interview, because if you don't know, that's the whole set of the 50 Shades of Grey. So Kate and Anastasia, who's the main character, Kate's a journalist. She's supposed to go get an interview with mega billionaire Christian Grey, but she's sick. So she decides to send her non-journalist roommate in her place to get the interview, which seems like a bad idea, Kate, but fine. There's a lot. So I changed some lyrics here and there, so I'll just run through it quickly. There's a line in To Build a Home where Francesca says, where a truck will take them deeper into Iowa to Winterset and 300 acres waiting to be tamed. So I'll have Anna say, where a train will take her deeper into Seattle to Grey Enterprise Holdings. And 30 minutes later, I'll walk confidently inside. And then we have Home Before You Know It, which can stay home before you know it. So then originally that's Francesca's husband telling her he'll be home before she knows it. And this one, it's Anastasia telling her roommate Kate that she'll be back from her fake interview soon. So the original lyrics are kind of like, now look, if anything goes wrong, I know you don't think it ever will, but if it does, and he like tells her that her neighbor's next door, and that'll be fine. So we'll have Kate say, now look, if anything goes wrong, I know you think it never will, but if it does, just call me, I'll be here alone. And Anastasia goes, no, Kate, you're free and clear. I've got the questions fixed and ready. So while I'm out with the billionaire, I should be fine. And if I'm not, I'll pick up the phone. Great.
Ooh, I love the pick up the phone, like as the anchor between the two.
Thank you. And then Temporary Loss becomes Temporarily Struck. Christian singing about Anastasia catching him off guard right after.
Wait, but is it like, no, but is it dead ass like struck?
No.
Like, is it like temporarily like I whipped that
no, Anastasia? I just felt like struck by her. Got it. Wow.
Okay.
It could be, enough. I guess. Anyway, so he goes, you know, in the original, Stephen Pascal was like, I've been looking for something at every bridge that I've crossed. So in mine, we'd have Christian say, I've been looking for someone at every BDSM club. But this time I feel, no, this can't be real. I'm just temporarily struck. So then the next song is, What Do You Call a Man Like That? Which will stay, What Do You Call a Man Like That in the 50 Shades musical? But then in parentheses after that, it'll say a stalker. And it's when Anastasia sings about Christian after he visits her at her place of work, which is a hardware store.
It's weird.
It's very weird. And he buys like rope and stuff. The words to the original words to What Do You Call a Man Like That are like Francesca waxing poetic about like how handsome she finds Robert. And Anna will say, what do you call a man like that? The kind of guy who comes to see me at work. But how did he find me? From a phone book, the internet, or following me? No, don't be ridiculous. He's handsome and strong. What do you call a man like that? And then You're Never Alone also stays You're Never Alone. It just becomes like a stalkery song for Christian. So in the original show, this is like talking about how they live in a small town and like you're never alone because it's so small. But Christian will be literally singing about Anastasia's never alone. Went down and he'll say, went down to the girl's work to check and see how she is. And look at her face. And I knew I was done. So beautiful, too innocent for me to corrupt. Lord knows I'm far too gone, but I feel I'll erupt. Literally. Okay. And then Another Life becomes BDSM Life. And we talked about that song enough. But it's just Anna thinking about what it would be like. So you know how the song starts off, like,
yeah,
inside the picture frame, some tables and a coffee pot, uniform of girl 23. Anna will go, put inside the picture frame some handcuffs and a paddle. Tied to a bed, a girl of 21. Standing over her, put a man of 27, a dom, if that girl has ever seen one.
Wow. Yes.
And then I have some more, but I think
BDSM Life.
Yes. We've been going for so long, so I'll just end with this one. I have some more. If you want to know, let me know. But Wondering, that song, which I didn't talk about it, it's fucking gorgeous, becomes Negotiating. So this is like the famous negotiation scene in Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
So the little the lyrics in the original song are really, really beautiful. A little twinge, a little shock, a whisper at the bottom of her mouth, all that stuff. And he's just like thinking about her while she's gone. And it's gonna become a duet. So Christian goes, a little offer, a little meeting, decisions about what will be permissible. And Anna goes, no to that, soft limit here. No, I don't want spanking, please. And Christian goes, I hold my breath. She's into that? I reassure her that the ball is in her court. And then they go, we're negotiating. Negotiating. And then, yes, negotiating. And Anna says, negotiating. And until we're done, nothing's going to happen. And Christian says, nothing's going to happen. And I'll stop there. I have some more, but that's good.
That'll be our OnlyFans content.
For sure.
Season 2.
Season 2, baby.
Amazing. I love that. I want to see 50 Shades, the musical now.
Hit me up. Ratatouille did it. Okay.
So here's my recreate is going to involve you, Sammy. First, I want to preface this by saying that I promise it might feel like I didn't spend much time thinking about this, but surprisingly enough, this is one of the recreates that I thought the most about because I had so many ideas. But what I came down to is ultimately, like, how could I not? This is a musical called Title of Show about two people writing a musical, about two people writing a musical to enter in a contest. Mm-hmm. And they write it by talking to each other and figuring out what that would look like. So here's my proposal. What if this podcast doesn't work out for us and we have to quit and start another podcast? Mm-hmm. I'm going to call it Title of Pod. And this is going to be an improv exercise.
Oh, God.
I'm going to set the, I'm watching the clock for 3 minutes. Okay. And we have to create our new podcast called Title of Pod in the next 3 minutes. So tell me when you're ready and we can start.
I guess I'm ready. Well, what do you think it should be about? Like, anything we put in it will be on the pod. Anything we say right now will be on the pod.
Yeah. So I think that I think that we should make a podcast about the process of us making a podcast. Because let's think about it. People don't actually know how to make a podcast.
No, they don't.
Like, there's a lot more. People are like, oh, you just like talk to each other. You record. It's like, no, bitch, there's more.
No, and we also had to figure out, there are the editing exercises, they're editing, learning on the
which
job,
we're still which working through.
Today. We had a malfunction today, and this audio is probably as good as it's going to get until, like, some company picks us up and they give us nice things. But, yeah, that's right. And I think, I mean, this podcast came from, as you know, the Shrek Into the Woods debate. But then after the fact, we had to think about like album art. There's a lot of stuff you have to think about.
There's a lot of components about podcasting.
Do you remember that whole debacle?
I do remember that debacle. Yeah. And I'm just saying, I think that we could structure a podcast that is about all the steps you need to take to make a podcast. So episode one, find yourself. I don't know. Well, I mean, you have to know what you're going to talk about. So that's what this is. This is episode one. We're making a podcast about making a podcast.
So episode one is figuring out what you're talking about. So just like think making about your interests, what you want. Episode two, find a partner. Right.
Yes. If you so please.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you could like do it by yourself, but where's the fun in that?
Yeah, that's not fun.
Yeah. And then episode three, you keep looking at the time.
I literally do. I fucking hate improv. I don't know why.
I am having high school flashbacks like no other. I can't stand improv. They made me do it.
Okay, episode three, you need to figure out your shit. So now you know what you're going to talk about. You know who you're going to do it with. You have to come up with some fucking structure because here's, you know what? I'm going to let you in on some tea. On our previous podcast, the show Rate, Debate, Recreate, before we were hosts.
Before we had this new podcast. Yeah.
Probably recorded our first episode like five times because we literally did, Sammy, because the concept of our show kept changing. And now that I'm thinking about it, this is some like lore for Rate, Debate, Recreate. The very original idea, the concept for it was that it was going to be like a March Madness musical theater bracket. And we were going to remember. And so then we were like, we're going to advance. And obviously now we're not going to do that because it's like, what more am I going to add to the musical that I've already talked about just so that.
No, but that's true. And also,
you have to get your shit together, which we didn't do, which forced us to record the first episode like five times.
Yeah, because we thought we would have enough people listening to vote in the March Madness bracket. Which, I mean,
you all, maybe. None of you hoes comment on my Instagram. I'm like, hey, which, I'm like, which show are you, what team are you on? And no one comments. Like, it really hurts my feelings, y'all.
Yeah.
So get a marketing plan. That's episode four.
Yeah, which maybe we still haven't done that, but who knows?
We got 30 seconds.
Okay. Oh, fuck. I've been tweeting. I try to tweet like three times about each episode, like close around the day. But then sometimes I forget about the Twitter and then I go in there and I'm like, fuck, I gotta say something. You're better at this than me because you can talk to random people. That's the other thing. Reach out to your
homies. Yeah, I'm such a fangirl. I just like will find musical theater people on TikTok and DM them and be like, hey, I found out about this new podcast on musicals and I think you'd really like it.
And I found out about it because I host.
And then I'm always like, I always do say something like, I'm like, hey girl, I'm the host, just to let you know. But also like, then that's a nice friendly intro and people want to listen. A few people that we have reached out to have listened. So
that's true.
That's a win. And that is Title of Pod. Never doing improv again. Sorry, I didn't do that. True. But to be fair, it does feel the most in line with my show this week.
It does. That's true. God. Wow. That was really fun. We talked so long. I feel like these are getting longer because we're getting better at finding.
Because we're getting better. We know what we're doing now. We actually come prepared.
For sure. That's true, actually.
Okay. Well, should we? Yeah. I did not prepare that well for our earlier episode. It's fine. I like usually didn't even watch Sammy's show and now I'm like always watching both shows and I have my notes ready.
Yeah. All right. So do you have the jock pulled up with the next category? Okay.
I do.
Okay. I'm nervous. I don't know what it is. Okay. Drum roll. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
White boy tries to find himself (ends badly.
Yes!
So just to clarify, obviously I'm not trying to say that only a white person can play the lead role in the two shows we're going to talk about. But I will say that it's very commonly done with
by a white boy.
White boys.
Yes.
Yes, by twinkie white boys in the lead role. And they try to find themselves, and neither of these shows end on a super positive note. So let maybe us know what week. Your thoughts are, what you think it will be.
Maybe next week we should come with actors of color who we think would be good in these parts too. Because I feel like they usually are played by like white boys. Which
They're
is,
always white boys, category. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, this was a great episode, Sammy. Always
this
a pleasure.
So all right, we'll see you,
bye.
Girls and Gays, next week.
Yes, bye. We love you.
Bye. Bye.